Well, the first three chapters of Daniel have all been from the specific viewpoint of Daniel and his three friends. We've seen in the first chapter how they were taken into captivity, these young men who were the best and the brightest of Jerusalem, and they've gone to Babylon, where they are forced to be servants to King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. We've seen in chapter 2 how Daniel rose to prominence in the kingdom because he alone was able to not only interpret the king's dream, but tell him what he dreamed when he would not disclose it to anyone. And last week we saw how Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego were those who refused to bow down to this great golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had built in homage to himself, and were ultimately saved from the burning fiery furnace. It's all been from their perspective. But chapter 4 is not told through the eyes of Daniel, nor of Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, but it's told by Nebuchadnezzar himself. It's quite remarkable, this chapter. It is a letter written by the king of Babylon to the inhabitants of his kingdom about his own personal encounter with the one true and living God. We read in verses 1 to 3 the introduction to his letter, almost like a New Testament epistle from an apostle. King Nebuchadnezzar, to all peoples, nations and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. You can almost picture it being New Testament, can't you? It has seemed good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures from generation to generation. And we can say with King Nebuchadnezzar, Amen. So let's see in chapter 4 what these signs and wonders were that the Most High had done for the king. There's three things. Well, in fact, there's going to be four things I want you to see. Firstly, Nebuchadnezzar tells us that a dream was received in verses 4 to 18. A dream was received. This is not the only time we've seen King Nebuchadnezzar be troubled by a dream. But last time, his dream had followed after a sleepless night where he had been lying on his bed, worried about the future of his kingdom, what would happen next. And as he drifted off to sleep, he was given this dream that awoke him and terrified him, a dream he could not make sense of. Well, on this occasion, he's not lying awake at night, concerned, anxious about the future. But he is actually, he says, at ease. All's well. Everything is good. After all, he is the head of gold that he dreamt of last time. He is the most powerful man in the world at this time. He is content about his kingdom. So what did the dream consist of? What was in this dream that Nebuchadnezzar saw that troubled him so much, that changed him from a state of ease and contentment into being anxious and fearful? Well, he saw the rise of a tree. Verses 10 to 12. We read about how Nebuchadnezzar dreamt he saw in the middle of the earth this great tree growing all the way, reaching into the skies, into heaven itself. It is the tallest of all the trees on the earth. It's so tall was this tree that it can be seen throughout the entire world. It's impressive. And not only is it tall, it is strong. And it is not a tree that looks unstable or is going to be blown down. It is a strong tree and a fruitful tree. And so the animals, all the animals of the earth, are able to come under its branches, and they are to find shade for themselves. All the birds of the heavens are able to come and make nests in the branches. This is an impressive tree. But just as he saw the rise of the tree, he saw the fall of a tree. As he continued to watch, he sees a watcher, an angel from heaven, come down. This is almost like the Tower of Babylon, or the Tower of Babel, isn't it? That they try to reach up to the sky, and then the Lord came down to view it. This angel comes down from heaven, and what does the angel do? He commands for the tree to be chopped down. This impressive, strong, tall tree to be chopped down, for its leaves to be stripped, for the beasts to flee from underneath its shade, for the birds to run from its fly from its branches. Birds don't run, to fly from its branches. And this is an unusual tree. This is where the dream for Nebuchadnezzar, you can understand it might get a bit strange, even stranger, because the angel speaks about this tree having a mind of a man, and that the tree's mind should no longer be the mind of a man, but should be the mind of a beast. And so it's now exposed to the elements of the weather, the dew in the morning. It is going to have its portion with the animals. In other words, it's going to eat with the animals. And then there's going to be a root that's left. And then the angel tells us why this decree has been made, why this sentence has come from heaven. He says, verse 17, the sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the holy ones, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sets over it the lowliest of men. There's a dream received. But secondly, Nebuchadnezzar tells us about a dream explained. A dream explained in verses 19 to 27. Nebuchadnezzar, just as before, has called all of his wise men, the magicians, the Chaldeans, the astrologers, with all of their wisdom and all of their so-called intelligence, to gather around him to advise him. He wants to know, what does this mean? What was this dream all about? And none of them can tell him. Although, I have a suspicion, I'll let you decide whether I'm right about this, I have a suspicion that it wasn't only that they didn't know, but they didn't want to tell him. Because we see that in Daniel's hesitancy, don't we? When he says, he says, verse 18, this dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, saw, and you, O Belteshazzar, tell me the interpretation, because all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation, but you are able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in you. Then Daniel, verse 19, whose name was Belteshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. And the king answered and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation alarm you. And so Daniel says, to try and perhaps bring the king's temperature down, and says, let this dream be to your enemies. He knows this is not good news for the king, as he has heard this dream. And so what did the dream mean? Well, this dream was about the rise of Nebuchadnezzar. It was about Nebuchadnezzar's rise. This tree, Daniel reveals, this great tall tree that reaches to heaven, where the birds come in to nest, where the animals come under to find shade. This is you, O king. Because like that tree, you have grown to be great. You have grown to be powerful. In other words, there's no one quite like you in all the earth, O King Nebuchadnezzar. And your rule and your kingdom have reached to the ends of the earth. You have swallowed up all the other nations. There is no kingdom on earth like your kingdom, O Nebuchadnezzar. It was about the rise of the king, but then the bad news, it was also about the fall of Nebuchadnezzar. Because just as that tree was cut down, Daniel says, Nebuchadnezzar, you are going to be humbled. The Most High God has decreed that you will be sent to live with the animals. Your mind will be changed from that of a man to a beast. And you will not only live with them, you will live like them. You'll wake up with the dew of the morning on your face, not in your royal palace. And you will not dine at the king's table, but you will dine with the beasts of the field for a time. And what is the purpose of this? Well, it will be that you will be like this, Nebuchadnezzar, until you come to know, well, that God rules. Verse 25, you shall be made to eat grass like an ox, you shall be wet with the dew of heaven, and 7 periods of time shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. The dream explained. But then thirdly, Nebuchadnezzar tells us about a dream fulfilled in verses 28 to 37. We read in verse 28 and 29 that a period of 12 months has passed. It's been an entire year and nothing has happened. I wonder if it could be that Nebuchadnezzar had forgotten the dream, because he tells us what happened next. He was exalted. He was so at ease at the end of those 12 months that what is he doing? He's walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. It seems to me that in scriptures that it's not always a good idea for a king to walk on the roof of his royal palace. Things don't go well when they do that. Because here is a sense of pride in Nebuchadnezzar. He is walking on his palace because he is so filled with pride in everything he has done. It's a perfect place to look over his kingdom, to relish in everything that he has achieved. So much so that he even says out loud, is not this great Babylon, in verse 30, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence and for the glory of my majesty? In other words, all that I have achieved, everything that has been accomplished, is due to the work of my own mighty hands. I've done it myself, and the reader should know that is not true. After all, Nebuchadnezzar only invaded Jerusalem and only took, defeated the king of Jerusalem and only took the men captive because the Lord allowed it. But here he is, reveling in his own greatness, reveling in his own majesty and his own glory, filled with pride, truly exalted. Who could possibly challenge him? Who could rival him? Well, in the next breath, we find that he was humbled. Because all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. As soon as his words of congratulations had left his lips, a voice from heaven speaks. It tells him, reminiscent of the prophet to Saul, the kingdom has departed from you. and you will be driven out into the wild to the beasts. And at that very moment, Nebuchadnezzar became like an animal. It would have been quite astonishing to witness this man. We've, in our own history in the UK, have had our fair share of interesting kings who have done some unusual things. You can remember the Mad King. Well, you probably don't remember the Mad King, but you have read of him. But here is something that rivals all of those stories, and here is Nebuchadnezzar, who leaves his palace for the field, who begins to live, and not able to reason, he lives among the animals, so that his body is wet with the dew of heaven, his hair grows long, as long as eagle feathers, it's described, and his nails are like birds' claws. You would have seen him and not thought, here is the king. You would have thought, here is a madman. He is humbled until he comes to his senses, until he comes to realize there is one God, there is a God who is more glorious than him, and who alone deserves the glory. He says, verse 34, at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my reason was returned to me, and I blessed the Most High, and praised and honored him who lives forever. And then look at verse 36 to 37. At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my majesty and my splendor returned to me. My counselors sought me, and I was established in my kingdom, and still more greatness was added to me. But here's the difference. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven. It was a dream received, a dream explained, a dream fulfilled. Well, finally, let's see how this dream is applied to us today. There are three lessons that we learn from Nebuchadnezzar's testimony here in Daniel chapter 4. Firstly, the prevailing lesson of this chapter is that God rules the kingdoms of men. In the ancient Near East, the deities that they worshipped were always considered to be local, territorial deities. Their power extended only as far as their border did. And so you have Nebuchadnezzar, and even in his renaming of Daniel, he shows that he has his own gods. Belteshazzar, he says, was the name of his god. He was named after his god, was Daniel. And so here is the God of Israel, the God who dwelt in the temple in Jerusalem, showing not only to Nebuchadnezzar, but to all of his people who are now in captivity, and perhaps very worried that their God would be unable to hear them, a God who would be unable to act for them, is as much present with them in Babylon as he was in Jerusalem. And they would realize through this humbling experience of Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful man in the world, that he is not the greatest on all the earth, that he is not the most powerful, that he does not have the most glorious kingdom. God does, the Most High God, Yahweh. Yahweh, who is not limited by national boundaries. Yahweh, who transcends over all kingdoms of the earth. Yahweh, who is alone God Most High, and who rules by his word, and whose decrees are always true and can never be hindered. His hand cannot be stayed, says Daniel. His hand cannot be stayed. And we may threat and we may fear as we look at the kingdoms of the world and as we look at the international powers of the world even today, and we may fear that the world is out of control, that these men are too powerful for anyone to stop, and we must remember God's kingdom is above our kingdoms, and God rules throughout the whole world. His purposes will be accomplished. His word will be always fulfilled. God rules the kingdoms of men. But also, God gives the kingdom to whom he wills. There is not a single person in any place who is in a position of authority who has not been given that permission to rule in that way except for the sovereign will of God. He is the God who sets up thrones, and he is the God who, as easily as he sets a man on a throne, is able to remove him from it. As we pray often for the persecuted church, as we often pray for international affairs, we often hear news about politicians and about governments in this country and in other countries, there may be times when we feel that they are unreachable, that no one can stop them in doing the plans that they have, often quite evil plans. But the Lord is. The Lord is. Nebuchadnezzar thought he was safe, thought he was secure, walking on the roof of his palace. And in an instant he is taken to the field. In an instant he is made to be like a beast of the field, without capacity to be able to reason, with no ability to give commands to his officials. He is there until the Lord permits him to return. The Lord gives the kingdom to whom he wills. He gives authority to whom he wills. And then thirdly, God humbles the kings of the earth. Just as Nebuchadnezzar humbled himself in order that was humbled, he didn't humble himself, as Nebuchadnezzar was humbled, and in order to give glory to God, so all the kings, all the powers of the earth, will be humbled before God. God has set his son to rule from the throne of heaven, and one day all kings, all queens, all princes, all politicians will bow before him and call him Lord. So let's not be afraid of godless authorities with their power to make godless policies, but let's trust the Lord whose power and kingdom rules over all. Remembering the words of Psalm 2, verses 1 to 6. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my son, my king, on Zion, my holy hill. Mm-hmm.